This is Bill Smith. I am the chairman of the Selective Service Law Panel in Los Angeles. This tape is made current as of June 15, 1980. Subsequent changes in Selective Service regulation or legislation by Congress could change what I'm about to say. Selective Service regulations are published in 32 Code of Federal Regulations, Part 1600, and those sections that follow. The last volume of this publication was issued on July 1, 1979, and will be republished on July 1, 1980. In the interim, regulations are published in the Federal Register, which is issued daily from Washington, D.C. by the Government Printing Office. Copies of the Federal Register may be obtained from most public or law libraries. The Federal Register of Monday, June 16, 1980, will have proposed Selective Service regulations relating to registration. At the present time, draft counselors should be aware of the following facts. Both the Senate and the House have passed versions of Selective Service appropriations which will cause individuals who were born January 1, 1960 or later, who are male, to register for the draft beginning in the summer of 1980. In all likelihood, the last 2 weeks of July or the first week of August 1980. Those who are required to register under the new law include all United States citizens, irrespective of where they are located. That includes U.S. citizens who are living abroad. In addition, all permanent resident aliens in the United States must register. All undocumented workers or so-called illegal aliens must register. All refugees or aliens on parole status, such as Cuban boat people, Cuban refugees, etc., must register. Only aliens who are here on non-permanent resident alien visas are not required to register. Generally speaking, those include diplomats, representatives of foreign press associations, foreign students, and the like. All other aliens are required to register. Individuals who live in Puerto Rico, Guam, in the Virgin Islands, the District of Columbia, Hawaii, and Alaska, and all American Indians are required to register for the draft. Individuals who live in American Samoa and Swains Island are not required to register for the draft unless they come to the United States. Registration will occur by the filling out of a registration form during the weeks announced by the Selective Service System in 1980. Those people born in 1960 and 1961 will register during the summer of 1980. Those people born in 1962 will register in January of 1981. Those people born in 1963 and later will register within 5 or 30 days of their 18th birthday. Registration consists of filling out of a registration form, which includes the individual's name, his sex, his Social Security number, his permanent address, his mailing address, his date of birth, his telephone number, and his signature and date. Under the Selective Service Law, all of this information must be supplied. None of it is optional. Failure to provide any of the information could result in punishment by a maximum of 5 years in a federal penitentiary and or a $10,000 fine. Any violation of the Selective Service Act at the present time carries the same penalty. Following registration for the draft, the individual will receive a letter acknowledging his registration. Thereafter, nothing will happen unless President Carter decides, or the chief executive, whoever that may be, decides, to carry forward further activity under the Selective Service System. The next action that could take place would be a lottery drawing to assign lottery numbers to all individuals who have registered for the draft. The lottery drawing is a system whereby each day of the year is assigned a separate number at random so that an individual will know at some point in time that he has a lottery number between 1 and 365. Those individuals who have lottery number 1 are drafted first in any given year. generally speaking, the individual will have his main liability for the draft in the year in which he reaches age 20. So that, for example, a person born in 1960 has his primary liability for Selective Service induction in the year 1980. A person born in the year 1961 has his primary year of liability in 1981. The year of liability is a calendar year running from January 1 through December 31 of the year in which the individual reaches age 20. So that in some cases a person could be 19 and be drafted, and in some cases he would be 20 depending on his birth date. Normally, the Selective Service induction orders would be sent to individuals in groups of lottery numbers from 1 through 31st, from 31 through 62nd, etc., until the quotas had been filled for the given year. In the year in which the individual reaches age 20, he goes into what is called the first priority selection group on January 1 of that year and remains in the first priority selection group until December 31 of that year. Thereafter, if his lottery number has not been reached, in January 1 of the following year, that is, on January 1 of the year in which he reaches age 21, he will be placed in the second priority selection group and will not be called until all individuals of the first priority selection group for that year have been called. So that in the example previously given, a person born in the year 1960 would enter the first priority selection group as of January 1, 1980, and would fall out of the first priority selection group on December 31, 1980. On January 1, 1981, people born in 1961 would enter the first priority selection group. And if a draft call were issued in 1981, people born in 1961 would be called first by lottery number with 1 through 365. And then if all lottery numbers were taken for people born in 1961, those individuals born in 1960 would be drafted next. The same thing would happen in 1982 with people born 1962 drafted first, people born in 1961 drafted second, and people born 1960 drafted third. Under the present law, individuals who are assigned lottery numbers would be sent a classification questionnaire if it was determined that classification action was necessary. The president can make this determination without further action of Congress. Classification action under the present law would require the Selective Service System to send each registrant a classification questionnaire, which would be filled out and returned to a local draft board. After the classification questionnaire had been returned to the local board would send the individual additional forms to fill out depending on any claim he might have made on the classification questionnaire. For example, the individual might claim to be a conscientious objector on the classification questionnaire, and in response, the draft board would send him Selective Service System Form 150, the special form for conscientious objectors. After the individual returned that form to the draft board, if the president had determined that classification action was necessary, the draft board would classify the individual, either giving him the deferment or exemption he had claimed. For example, if he had claimed to be a conscientious objector, the draft board might classify him 1-0, which is a conscientious objector classification, or the draft board might deny the deferment and classify the individual 1-A. At that point, if the individual was notified of a 1-A classification, he would have 15 days from the date the draft board mailed the classification notice to him to take appellate action. Appellate action would include requesting a personal appearance before the local draft board. Following the request for personal appearance before the local board, many local boards in the Vietnam War would then order the individual to report for pre-induction physical examination before giving the individual a hearing. The purpose of proceeding in this fashion would be to eliminate those individuals who failed to pass the physical examination and thus eliminate a large number of hearings. So the individual might next be called for a pre-induction physical examination, and if the person passed the physical, the draft board would then be required to call the individual in for a hearing. The draft boards during the Vietnam War consisted of 5 individuals, so the individual would come in and present his case before 5 individuals and be allowed to present documentary evidence and testimony of witnesses. He could not be represented by legal counsel or an attorney. Following the hearing, the board would reclassify the individual into either a 1A status if they had denied his claim, or they would grant him whatever deferment he had requested. If the claim the individual had made was denied by the local board, he would be sent a 1A notice and would be given 15 days to file an appeal to the state appeal board. Again, the individual would have the right to appear before the state appeal board to argue his case, and would appear before 5 members of the state appeal board to argue his case again. If the state appeal board denied the claim unanimously, that would be the end of the appellate process. If the appeal board granted the claim, the individual would receive his deferment. If the appeal board had a split vote with the majority voting against the registrant and a minority voting in his favor, even if only one voted in his favor, he would have an opportunity to take a further appeal to the presidential or national appeal board and also appear before that board. In most cases, it would be expected that the state appeal board would rule unanimously either in favor or opposed to the registrant, and appeals to the national or presidential appeal board would be very rare. Now, this is a process that would occur if present selective service regulations were followed. However, one should keep in mind that at the present time, only registration has been authorized by the president. The classification process has not been authorized. The appellate process has not been authorized. Pre-induction physicals have not been authorized. And it is not expected that any of these events will occur in the immediate future. Also, proposals have been made to change the selective service regulations so that a different procedure will be followed. If the changes are enacted into regulations by the selective service system, and incidentally, these changes do not have to be ratified by Congress, selective service, acting under the direction of the president, has the power to issue regulations at any time without the consent of Congress, as long as it is not inconsistent with congressional action. So that the proposal has been that all present regulations be modified so that an individual simply registers for the draft, is assigned a lottery number, and the next step that would occur would be that an induction order would be sent to the individual, and then and only then could he take action to claim a deferment or an exemption. So that the procedure would be first, registration, second, the assignment of a lottery number, third, the issuance of an induction notice with a notice permitting the individual to obtain a cancellation or postponement of the induction order by the expedient of writing in to request a hearing before his board, but he would have to do so within 15 days. If he failed to do so, he would be required to appear for induction on the date specified in the induction notice. No pre-induction physical examination would be conducted under this system, and the individual would be required to show up at the induction center where he would be given his first and only physical examination. If he should pass that physical examination, he would not have any further appeals and would be required to enter the Army the same day the physical occurred. If, on the other hand, the individual had requested a hearing before his draft board within 15 days of the date the induction order was mailed to him, the induction order would then be canceled or postponed, and the individual would be permitted to appear before the local board and ultimately the state or national appeal boards in the same manner that I have previously described. However, if the individual failed to convince the local or appeal boards to change his classification, the induction order would be reissued at the conclusion of the appellate process, and he would be expected to report for induction on the date specified in the new order. If the individual passed his physical examination on that date, he would be in the Army that day unless he refused induction. There would be no appeal under this new system of a finding of physical acceptability. We expect that the proposal will probably be enacted into regulation form in the very near future, and counselors should examine the Federal Register regularly for any changes in the Selective Service regulations. At the present time, the 3 available deferments, insofar as the great majority of the Selective Service registrants are concerned, are hardship or dependency. conscientious objection, and medical. First, let's talk about the deferments that are available to a small number of individuals. Elected public officials are deferred, but very few people born January 1, 1960 or later are going to be elected to public office, at least in the near future. Individuals who are ministers, priests, or rabbis in recognized churches or religious institutions are deferred, but beware of advertisements alleging that by the simple expedient of sending in $4 for a Universal Life Church certificate, one will become exempt from the draft. Selective Service will insist that the individual is a full-time minister of religion in normally a Christian or Catholic or Jewish religious organization. It would be very difficult for people in Eastern religions or in religious organizations that had not existed for more than 500 years to be recognized by Selective Service. And keep in mind that one must be a full-time minister to qualify for the deferment. Theological and divinity school students are also exempt from the draft, and these are the only student deferments remaining other than people actually in medical school. Very few people in the 19 or 20 year old bracket are going to be in medical school or theological or divinity school. Nevertheless, these must be accredited theological or divinity schools preparing people for the ministry. And again, new religious organizations may not qualify. With respect to sole surviving sons, an individual must be the son of in a family where either the father or one or more brothers or sisters died as a result of a service-connected disability or died on active duty with the Armed Forces of the United States. Simply being the only son in the family is not a qualification for deferment. Certain U.S. citizens who are citizens of other countries are also potentially exempt, but an individual cannot become a citizen of one of these countries unless he already has acquired that citizenship. For example, a person who is a citizen of both the United States and Ireland, or the United States and Italy, or the United States and Argentina may claim an exemption from military service. Aliens who are citizens or nationals of certain foreign countries can claim exemption from military service, but in so doing they may lose their eligibility permanently for U.S. citizenship and should receive advice from an immigration lawyer or a counselor before proceeding in this fashion. Other than these rare deferments, the only deferments, as I've said, that will be available to the majority of people are medical, conscientious objection, and hardship. For hardship or dependency, Selective Service will probably require showing that an individual is married with at least two children, or that he is supporting some individual, parent, child, wife, etc., who is physically disabled and cannot care for themselves and has no other individual to provide such care, so that a very difficult burden of proof will be on the registrant making this claim. For the medical deferment, as I previously indicated, the regulations may very well be changed so that the examination is not given until the date of induction, meaning that an individual who presumes that he is going to fail the physical examination is putting all of his eggs in one basket and will have to make a very quick decision on induction date if he is wrong and is found acceptable for induction. Because at that point he has no appeal. He either goes into the Army or refuses induction. And if he refuses induction based on a determination in his own mind that he's physically unacceptable, the burden of proof will be on him in court to prove that he was in fact physically disabled. For the people who are physically disabled or physically not qualified for military service, Army Regulation 40-501, Chapter 2, contains the standards for determining eligibility for enlistment or induction into the armed forces. This regulation may be obtained from the Army Publications Center at 2800 Eastern Boulevard, Baltimore, Maryland 21220, at a cost of approximately $4.85. Simply write a letter to that organization, enclose a check for $4.85, and ask for a copy of Army Regulation 40-501. This will contain the medical standards. The regulation is amended only on the average of once every 2 or 3 years, and once you have a current copy, it will probably remain current for many years to come. All draft counselors should have a copy of the Army medical regulations. For conscientious objectors, by legal definition, a conscientious objector is somebody who is conscientiously opposed to participation in war in any form. The religious training aspect of the definition of conscientious objection has been severely curtailed by Supreme Court decisions, so that an individual today need not belong to any particular religious body to claim conscientious objector status. There are various organizations around the United States that publish information on conscientious objection, including the Central Committee for Conscientious Objection, which has an office both in Philadelphia and San Francisco. The Philadelphia office is located at 2208 South, S-O-U-T-H Street, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania 19146, and the West Coast office is located at 1251 Second Avenue, San Francisco, California 94122. The Central Committee for Conscientious Objectors publishes a registration card which can be used by an individual who wants to register today as a conscientious objector. This card is simply filled out and returned to the CCCO in Philadelphia, placing the individual on record as being a conscientious objector claimant as early as possible. Another portion of the card can be sent to the individual's church, synagogue, etc., for further registration. There are various organizations with which an individual could register as a conscientious objector. For example, the Jewish Peace Fellowship in Nyack, New York, address Post Office Box 271, Nyack, NYACK, New York 10960, or the Catholic Peace Fellowship at the same address, will supply information for Jewish or Catholic conscientious objectors. The National Inter-Service Board for Conscientious Objectors, abbreviated NISBCO, located at 550 Washington Building, 15th and New York Avenue, Northwest, Washington, D.C., 200-05, publishes a booklet entitled Words of Conscience, which has the statements of all religious bodies on conscientious objection, including the American Humanist Association. The Selectee Service Regulations, as I've indicated, are published in 32 CFR at Part 1600. The Selectee Service Law is may be obtained by reference to Title 50 Appendix of the United States Code, beginning with Section 451. Individuals who want further information on conscientious objection may write for a pamphlet entitled Conscientious Objection and You from the Central Committee for Conscientious Objectors in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and should also ask for the registration certificate so that they may file as a conscientious objector. Sample copies of the Special Form for Conscientious Objector, Selectee Service System Form 150, are available from the Selectee Service Law Panel in Los Angeles. The address of our panel is 1911 Wilshire, W-I-L-S-H-I-R-E Boulevard, Los Angeles, California 957. We also publish a Selectee Service Law Panel newsletter. Subscription price will be $10 per year. Individuals wishing further information concerning Selectee Service should write to the panel chairman, Bill Smith, at the address I previously given. And individuals who ask to be placed on the mailing list for the newsletter will receive all of the publications of the panel. Individuals who obtain copies of the tape recording that I'm currently made will be furnished copies of any supplements that are recorded at a later date to bring the law up to date. Any questions concerning Selectee Service Counseling should be referred to the panel if any doubt exists. regular meetings of the Selective Service Law Panel will occur throughout the summer in Los Angeles at St. John's Episcopal Church, located at 514 West Adams Boulevard, the corner of Adams and Flower in Los Angeles. Meetings will be every 2 weeks, commencing Monday, June 23, 1980. Any individual wishing to train as a counselor is invited to attend these meetings. In addition to the Selective Service Law Panel, the Women's Strike for Peace, located at 5539, that's 5539 West Pico Boulevard, Los Angeles, California, 90019, telephone area code 213-937-0236. They provide information concerning draft counseling and the location of draft counselors throughout the Southern California area. In addition, the Women's Strike for Peace publishes information that can be used by draft counselors in documentary form and supplies information by mail. Individuals might also wish to subscribe to the Draft Counselors newsletter from the Central Committee for Conscientious Objectors in San Francisco, California, at the address I have previously given. This is a very valuable source of information and is quite current. With respect to the Selective Service Law Panel, any individual may belong to the panel, receive the newsletter. It is not reserved exclusively for attorneys or law students. This is an amendment to the tape based on the proposed Selective Service regulations published in the Federal Register on Monday, June 16, 1980, at page 40577. Under these new proposed regulations, scheduled to become final on July 18, 1980, the sections of the Selective Service regulations relating to the duty and responsibility to register for the draft have been revoked and have been replaced by Part 1615 of the Selective Service regulations, including a part which suggests that the President of the United States will issue a proclamation at some time in the near future outlining the identity of those individuals who will be required to register for the draft. This may mean that some aliens who were previously required under the existing Selective Service Law and regulations to register may not be required to register in the future. Counselors should check with the Central Committee for Conscientious Objectors in Philadelphia or San Francisco, or the Selective Service Law Panel in Los Angeles for determination of the actual fixed responsibilities as to who does and who does not have to register beginning this summer. As for now, the memorandum prepared by the Selective Service Law Panel on the obligation of aliens to register for the draft is available to any subscriber to the Selective Service Law Panel newsletter, along with a copy of the proposed regulations. Included in the new Selective Service regulations is a section 1615.4A, which makes it clear that the Selective Service registrant must furnish all information at the time of his registration required by the registration form, including his Social Security number. There has been some suggestion by some counseling agencies that the Selective Service cannot legally order an individual to give his Social Security number. This seems to indicate otherwise. Also, at the time of registration, the individual must produce his identification, including either a birth certificate, a driver's license, a student ID card, a passport, or a similar document. Counselors should note that registrants preparing for conscientious objector status should, in addition to registering with the Central Committee for Conscientious Objectors in Philadelphia and perhaps some peace organization or peace church, should also fill out the entire Selective Service System Form 150, including the six essay questions on that form. Notarize the answers and file the answers away as proof of the fact that the individual has registered as a conscientious objector as early as possible. Copies of the Selective Service System Form 150 may be obtained from the Selective Service Law Panel in Los Angeles or the Central Committee for Conscientious Objectors in San Francisco or Philadelphia. One final note on student deferments. Although all student deferments have been eliminated, the regulations at 1622.26 continue to call for deferments for people in medical school, dental school, optometry school, schools of osteopathy, veterinarian medicine, and registered nursing. However, most of these schools require a four-year baccalaureate degree, and very few people of primary draft age would be eligible for the deferment. In addition, it is expected the Selective Service Regulations will be amended in the near future, and it is quite possible that these deferments will be eliminated. For further information concerning Selective Service Counseling, contact Bill Smith, Chairman of the Selective Service Law Panel in Los Angeles, telephone area code 213-413-4430, 1911 Wilshire Boulevard, Los Angeles, California, 90057.